Opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
This is Liberty Bell Smack with your hosts, Mark Mancini, Sal Tartaglia, and Marianne Castello. Talking everything sports, everything Philly style. Liberty Bell Smack, right here. Right now. And you're listening to Liberty Bell Smack right here on WWDB AM Talk 860 every Thursday night, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Prime Time, Drive Time. And I am your host, Marianne Castello. And you can listen five ways, whichever works best for you. You can tune in to WWDB AM Talk 860 if you're right out of Philadelphia. And if we've gone dark, you know what we mean. Then you can tune in at HD2 radio station 97.5, or you can download the WWDB radio app, or go to WWDBAM.com, click listen live. And if you want to call in and talk to our special guests tonight or talk to us, you can do so at dialing 888-329-3306. And I am going to go right ahead and bring in our next host. He is a broadcast vet born in Pittsburgh, but raised in sunny LA. You know him from his years in the ring with Extreme Professional Wrestling on TV. He's got over 17 years behind the mic from San Diego to Los Angeles with SiriusXM, the SB Nation American Forces Network, and now Philly on WWDBAM, as well as the Saucy Spin online radio show and the Breaking It Down podcast. If it's sports, he's done it, or he knows all about it. Let's welcome our host, Mr. Mark Mancini. Hi, Mark.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. That's going to be hard to follow with you laying that thing down, and I'm just so excited. Philadelphia, you got the cheesesteaks, you got the Rocky statue, the Liberty Bell. We're changing the landscape in the city. I'm just jacked up with these guests today. I'm excited.
I know. And you know what? We have something else in Philadelphia. And he's waiting right there. He's our next host. And he is a product of the schools and playing fields of Drexel Hills, Delaware County, by way of Southwest Philadelphia. He's been in the Navy. He's been in the construction industry and was a nuclear medicine tech. And while doing all of that, he even had time to compile over 30 years of highlights and stats of World Series games and published his first book, World Series Chronology. While doing press for the book, he developed a taste for broadcasting. And here he is. Let's welcome our next host, Sal Tartaglia. Hey, Sal.
Hey, how is everybody? Hi, Philadelphia. I'm stoked because 2 weeks from now, we're going to see Cincy win another game, hopefully, in the NCAA playoff. I'm really impressed that somehow that the voting committee didn't keep them out. I was surprised.
You know why they didn't? You're wearing a good sweatshirt again today. It says Italia right on it. I'm looking right at it.
Yes, it does.
And if the people want to see it, they can tune in live at Liberty Bell Smack Facebook live page or the WWDBAM page, and you could see us live right now.
Well, it's a good thing I combed my hair.
Yes, it is. And I know why you combed your hair, because you were going around the streets there in Philadelphia, weren't you?
Visiting friends, of course. Absolutely.
Visiting friends? Well, I may have a problem that you might have a solution to. Tell me about it.
Well, I have a friend that owns a auto body store in Fulcroft. It's called JT Auto Body. And I got to tell you, for superior auto body repairs at very reasonable prices, bring your damaged vehicle to JT Auto Body, located at 416 Primus Avenue, Fulcroft, PA. You can call them at 610-534-1643 for expert work done by owner Joey Trainer's staff of certified technicians. Again, that number, 610-534-1643.
Well, I love it. And guess what? Are you guys ready for Liberty Bell Smack? You know that lip smacking, trash talking good Philadelphia style. Are you boys ready?
Oh, man, every week we're ready.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I'm going for it because I'm so excited. I can't wait. He's sitting in the green room right now. He is an American sports writer and educator and has written more than five dozen nonfiction books, mainly about basketball and American football. Some of those titles include 50 years of the Final Four, golden moments of the NCAA basketball tournament. The Lakers, a basketball journey. Bull Run, the story of the 1995-96 Chicago Bulls. Blood on the Horns, the long, strange ride of Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls. Mad Game, the NBA education of Kobe Bryant. Mind Games, Phil Jackson's long, strange journey. Johnny Unitas, the best there ever was. Tom Brady, Sudden Glory. The Show, the inside story of the spectacular Los Angeles Lakers and the words of those who lived it. Jerry West, the life and legend of a basketball icon. Michael Jordan, the life. And Showboat, the life of Kobe Bryant. His book, Bull Run, was named Sports Book of the Year for 1997 by the Independent Publishers Association, and his book, Michael Jordan, The Life, was named Sports Book of the Year 2015 in the Polish Sports Book Awards. He studied at Virginia Military Institute and Holland University in Florida, and was an instructor teaching journalism at Virginia Tech and Radford University School of Communication for two decades. In 2015, he created Planet Blacksburg, a student organization focused on new media, journalism, and publishing. In April 2017, he redefined the term coaching tree, expanding it to include the coaches and assistants who worked under head coaches. He's a frequent contributor to sports documentaries, including ESPN's Sports Century, and a regular guest on television radio programs. His work has been cited in numerous publications and websites, including Sports Illustrated, The Washington Post, and NBA.com. And now we can add this radio show to his impressive accomplishments. Let's welcome Roland Lazenby to Liberty Bell Smack. Hi, Roland.
Yeah, baby.
How are you guys doing? Thank you for that introduction. If you hadn't read it so well, everybody would have been put to sleep. But the way you read it, I tell you, I was right on it.
Oh, thank you. And I'm going to turn it right over to Sal. Go for it, Sal.
Hi, Roland. You don't mind if I call you Roland?
Not at all. That's what I've been called for decades.
Yeah, I noticed, you're from Roanoke?
Yeah, well, I live in Roanoke, or Salem, right next to it. I'm actually from further west in the mountains, but the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia.
Is that close to, that's not close to Glen Allen, is it? Any chance?
To where?
Glen Allen, Virginia?
No, that's in Richmond. I married a girl from there 47 years ago, but that's the eastern part of the state. We're way out in where the tail of Virginia starts to narrow.
Okay. I noticed the amount of books that it's almost like every year you're publishing a book. I published one so far, and I'm struggling to publish my second. It's taken a year so far, but
every one you do is a struggle.
Yes, yes. But with regard to Bull Run was the book of the year, and Blood on the Horns was a bestseller. What do you consider either of these your best work?
No, I think probably Michael Jordan, The Life. It is a 700-page biography of Michael. It's now being, it has been translated into 20 languages, and the Portuguese just bought it. So it's now in 21 languages. Wow. And I came out in 2014 and has not let up since.
Congratulations. Getting back to Blood on the Horns, that was pretty much based on The Last Dance.
And I was there with the team, very close with Tex Winter, the great assistant coach to Phil Jackson, and had unprecedented access for that.
I noticed that Sam Smith had accused you. He was also a beat writer for the Bulls.
Yeah.
He accused you of a conspiracy theory with respect to assistant coach Johnny Box firing, but you substantiated all of your claims. This acrimony.
That's a very ugly incident, and it involved Sam.
Right.
And I had to call and get comment from him, and at the time he confirmed this stuff.
Right.
And it's just a very sad thing.
The acrimony between Sam and you, it almost mirrored the events that were going on with the Bulls. It's crazy. It's a similarity there.
We're two writers. Who cares what we have to say? I guess it is interesting to some, but you know, I just, he made a comment and I just went back at him and probably if we sat down and had a beer, it wouldn't be too bad, but we're both pretty old now. And we don't see each other anymore. But anyway, two writers going at it.
I coined a term.
I guess it's like putting two kittens in a box. I don't know.
I coined a term with respect to this. I called it bull envy.
That is good.
But with respect, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark. Go ahead.
No, Roland, I'll tell you, man, when I look at the team you covered for a lot of years and everything, the Chicago Bulls, I got to put that team up. And I know our next guest, when he gets in here, Tarek Brock, will jump in and throw some questions because this is going to be a dandy tonight. But, I haven't seen a team like that since I saw the Philadelphia 76ers with Dr. J and everything traveling around. And I was blessed enough to cover Jordan and the Bulls when they came to the sports arena in Los Angeles. But take the listeners through that traveling circus with Jordan and Rodman and Pippen and, you know, Jackson. That had to be something, my friend.
Well, you know, it started out quietly. And those first three championships, they were hardly under the radar. But they were nothing in terms of profile compared to when Dennis Rodman descended on Chicago. And, of course, that was preceded by Michael Jordan's grand return to basketball, which is probably – I covered a prison break down here in Virginia years ago that was through the roof, drove everybody crazy. All these murderers got off of death row, and it was berserk for a while, mania in the streets. But there was nothing like MJ coming back to the game in March of 1995. And then Rodman coming to town. I mean, it was ridiculous when, and you know, I've known Dennis. I've done a lot of work with the Pistons. Dennis was, I remember standing in the locker room in 89 in the finals when they swept the Lakers. And I was talking to Dennis and I said, you know, Dennis, there are people now saying you're the best rebounder in the NBA. And he went, what? People are saying that about me? Of course, that shows what a kid he was at the time, because that very quickly became passe because he was all over the place. I went down to hang out with him in Spurs camp before he went to the Bulls. And he was down there with David Robinson. David Robinson, a great human being. Great. I mean, there's nothing that guy can't do. 1,400 on college boards, electronics, scratch golfer. He just was not a maniac as far as working and practice. And Dennis wouldn't speak to David Robinson. They made a Pepsi commercial together and flew hours to him back, and it would drive David crazy. But Dennis was out of that old school. You know, those guys who played for Chuck Daly in Detroit, they would run through a wall for that guy. And so finally, Rodman got paroled from San Antonio. He hit, and he was bankrupt. He'd been playing, been shooting all those $50,000 craps and had run through a lot of money. But he hit Chicago. That city went crazy over him. He made $15 million off the court his first year, just in endorsements, and waved bye-bye to bankruptcy.
I thought Madonna was going to settle him down.
Well, you know, Dennis is a sweet soul. He a really good guy. But, man, he could find the trouble. And the crowd, you know, it was the crowd that sort of ran with him.
Yeah.
It was hard to protect. Toward the end, it really got hard to protect him from himself. But he was always the kind of guy who would grab his lesser teammates, get them on a plane, and take them all to a Pearl Jam concert. Dennis was real people. You know, he knew the 40-year-old guys in the locker room picking up the towels and socks and jocks. You know, he was not above all of that. You can't say that. I mean, pro athletes have a certain decorum they observe, I guess. But Dennis,
Roland, I don't want to interrupt you. We have to break real quick for station break.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You probably just need to shoot a flare.
Well, no, actually, we have decorum here, so I actually love that. And that is, if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Liberty Bell Smack right here on WWDB AM Talk 860. And if you can't find us, we're out there in the dark somewhere, find us on HD2 radio station 97.5. Or you can listen to us anytime, anywhere by downloading the WWDB radio app. Or go right to their website, wwdbam.com, click Listen Live. And for a special treat, if you have Facebook, you can see our guests right here, right now, live with us and be part of the fun. And you can call to talk to our special guests at 888-329-3306. And I'm going to give that floor right back to you, Mark and Roland.
Well, I'll tell you, Roland, you know, tied into Philadelphia, you're really close with Billy Packer. You've done a lot of stuff with him.
He's been great to me over the years.
Yeah. Take us through it, how you that relationship started and everything, because, you know, doing the radio in Philadelphia, I'm sure these listeners would love to hear that one.
Well, you know, I was I wanted to do a book. I was a newspaper reporter. And I decided, this was in 81, 82 area, and I decided to do a book on Ralph Sampson. And Ralph at the time was not just a huge figure in college basketball at 7'4", considered by many the top player in the country, but he was revolutionizing Virginia and the University of Virginia. And it was a big cultural story. And so I started, you know, I would work my shift at the newspaper. I live in the western part of the state, and I would drive to Charlottesville and all over the ACC, just getting his story together, talking to his folks down in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And that's when I got to know Billy Packer, and because, you know, Ralph was the guy that season of 82-83, all the people were coming in. Al McGuire, all the networks. And so Billy is a regular guy, you know, and I say, Billy, let's do a book together. And so we started doing a series of books. And Billy's just always easy to work with. You know, everybody has the idea he's some big arrogant guy because he's very determined in his opinions, but he's just a coach's son from PA.
Wow. And then when you look at Kobe Bryant, you know, Lower Merion High School, you did some stuff with him. When you look at Michael Jordan and you look at Kobe Bryant, they're almost cut out of the same cloth, driven, determined individuals. You know, it's hard to see that these days in the NBA, isn't it?
It is. And of course, that's the old NBA. They both played the same position for the same coaches. And that was an elite club that could meet in a phone booth, because both of those guys in the triangle are out there on the wing. The triangle's at two guard front, and then the wing, they create an unbalanced floor. And on the weak side would always be, or usually be, Michael or Kobe, where it was impossible to double team them with the ball movement. You know, suddenly they could get to the basket. And I was sitting with Michael Jordan in the rafters down in Orlando while they were holding the pre-draft camp. He was generous to give me about 30 minutes. And I was talking with him. This was in 08 when Kobe was on his way to his MVP. And it looked like, you know, the Lakers were going to do major business in playoffs until they ran into the Celtics. But I was talking with Michael about Kobe. And I had sort of been a messenger back and forth between them over the years. One year, and Kobe was always really curious what was going on with Michael. And I'd done all those Bulls books. I was real tight with Tex Winter. I had introduced Kobe and Tex. And so I was asking Michael, and it was obvious in talking to him, you know, and Kobe came in as a teenager, and he really came in without a lot of respect. There was so much misunderstanding about Kobe's entry into the NBA. But it was obvious to me how much Michael, and this, you know, this is before all the horrible stuff that happened. This is before the cameras are all on him. It's just Michael and me sitting there. And Michael's talking about, you know, of everybody, Kobe's the one who's done the work. He said, I had people light my path for me, just like, you know, my example was there for Kobe. And he said, you know, he's done every bit of it. And so I had a nice talk and I really got a sense of, and they sort of had their own back and forth for years. But then I go out to L.A. and I'm in the Lakers locker room. They're getting ready to play an early round playoff game. And Kobe's over there, catty corner from me, tying up his shoes. And I say, Kobe, I've been talking to MJ about you. And he went, what? He lit up like a little kid, you know. He went, what? What'd he say? What'd he say? And they were just really important to each other. And, you know, Tex Winter all and the Bulls coaching staff always did their comparisons. And there were a lot of things. I could tell you about the comparisons, but I tend to run long-winded. And if I do, I'd probably run through another one of your commercials. Which, so we ought to check on time.
Which we're getting ready to do right now. But don't let me forget, I want to ask you about Michael's baseball prowess at some time before we leave tonight.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Absolutely. And if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Liberty Bell Smack right here. And I know that our sponsors help keep Liberty Bell Smack alive and well. And Sal, would you like to tell us about our sponsors?
Sure. I want to let you all know about my friend Joey Trainer once again. He has a auto body store in Fulcroft, Pennsylvania called JT Auto Body. And he has a gifted repair team that will have your car looking new and running fine. Owner Joey Trainer has been servicing the Delco area for decades from his shop at 416 Primus Avenue, Fulcroft. It's between Hook Road and McDade Boulevard. Call him at 610-534-1643. That's JT Auto Body.
That's on vehicles, right? It's not on us, right?
Yes.
The auto body work. Just body work, just say. And with that said, our next guest doesn't need body work. He is a former American professional baseball outfielder who played in Major League Baseball for the Chicago Cubs. He was drafted by the Detroit Tigers in the second round of the 1991 MLB June Amateur Draft from Hawthorne High School in Hawthorne, California, and played 12 years in the minors and one season of independent ball. He made his major league debut as a left fielder on March 29, 2000, in the Chicago Cubs opening day game against the New York Mets in the Tokyo Dome in Japan, where he singled in his first MLB at-bat off Rich Rodriguez. In 2006, he served as a coach in the Pioneer League with the Ogden Raptors. From 2007 through 2013, he worked as an outfield and base running coordinator for the Florida Marlins. During 2010, he served as interim first base coach. In 2014, he joined Major League Baseball as the first base coach for the Houston Astros and then joined the San Diego Padres organization as a minor league coordinator for the 2015 season before becoming their first base coach before the 2016 season. In 2017, he was the outfield and base running coordinator for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Prior to the 2020 season, he became the first base coach and still currently the first base coach with Pittsburgh Pirates. Being born on Christmas Day, he is our present today. Let's have a big Liberty Bell smack welcome to Tarik Brock. Hi. We need to unwrap.
How you guys doing? Thank you for having me. Wow, man. When you listen to it, you go like, wow, that's really an interesting story right there. But no, thank you. I'm glad to be on here. And let's...
Well, you know, Tarik, and so blessed, you know, to do the Pirate podcast with you the whole year, and it's just unbelievable. But I'll tell you, you look like you're ripped, and I'll tell you one thing: you might be having a second job here. You could probably make the GQ magazines out there in Los Angeles and knock Sean McVay off the covers.
It's just the lighting in the house. Like, we changed the lighting a year ago, so it's just the lighting hitting me right. And I'm probably wearing a shirt that actually fits me instead of the oversized shirts that we normally wear. So, but I appreciate it, though.
Hey, you know, I talk to you a lot, so I'm going to defer to this one because I know you're a big Laker fan. And Roland's covered a lot of things in the NBA. So if you got a question for Roland, I'll give you the next one, and then we'll give Sal a couple.
Most of the times the media can see some practices. But the one question I have is, like, when they would have their practices at the arena, the shoot around before, what was the intensity level like in those practices? Were guys getting after it, or
not much on shoot around?
Just to get a feel of the arena, to get their sight.
And they would be playing that night on morning shoot arounds. Those were actually sleepy things. The whole practice of the shoot around was started by the great Bill Sharman, who was a Lakers coach, Celtic player, Lakers coach, Lakers executive for years. All the players hated the shoot around, but he knew that if they got up and shot the morning of the game, and Wilt Chamberlain just despised it. But when you got up and shot the morning of the game, their shooting percentage, free throws were better. Bill Sharman was a detailed guy. And, you know, guys like Kobe, they could practice all the time and wanted to practice, especially in his early years. He's just a monster about it. But the NBA, it can't touch Major League Baseball, of course, in terms of schedule. The NBA has got a good 82-game schedule that a lot of people say is too much. That's nothing to what you guys in baseball go through. That's a way of life. But shoot around was the easier part of things.
Yeah, I always wondered about that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Hey, Tyreek, I'm looking at your bio, and you were up for a cup of coffee with the Cubs, but you got a hit in your first at bat. And then a couple months later, it just doesn't seem fair. They send people down. I think they misevaluate players a lot of times, because when you look at guys like we had Mike Eastler on a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and he was 10 years. He was, you know, and it's not right. I just think that the evaluation process has to be revamped. But with respect to your initial luck, you know, hitting your first at bat. Then you had a very extensive coaching career, as Marianne had explained. And I want to harken back to before, when you were playing in an independent league in Elmira, New Jersey. And you were scheduled to get on a flight the date that 9/11 occurred, to fly back to L.A. to see the birth of your son. Of course, you were delayed and spared being on United Flight 175. Otherwise, this extension coaching career never occurs.
Wow.
And I know you mentioned feeling blessed and you know, having a second chance and all, but do you still hearken back and think about that a lot?
I do, especially being on the East Coast. When we go play, you know, the Mets or the Yankees, it always hits me there. And then also being in PA, you know, this year in Pittsburgh, we hosted the families of some of those flights, especially the one that landed in the fields out in Pennsylvania, which is not that far from Pittsburgh. I got to shake, as well as everyone else, got to shake the hands of the surviving family members. And it was just surreal because, you know, I thought that, man, if things didn't work out the way they did, and I was fortunate enough to miss my flight, that could be, you know, my wife and kids who were getting their hands shook at that time. So it was just a special time and moment, something that I'll never forget and grateful for. And, you know, when I go on the ball field, you know, I take a little bit of those people and those surviving members and family members with me every time I'm on the field.
And that son, he'd be 20 years old now.
Yes. Yeah. 19, he'll be 20 in February.
Does he play? Does he play ball?
That's my little man, but he's bigger than me.
Does he play ball?
Yeah, he plays baseball. Okay. He's at Valley College. Yeah, he plays baseball.
Okay.
He's the little big boy now. He's bigger than everyone in the house, and he's been great. So he travels with me when we would go and see teams, and man, it's just been a blessing.
When you were outfield coach and base running coordinator for, I think, the Dodgers. Didn't they hire you because Mattingly was not the manager at the time? He was scheduled to be the coach, but because of an illness, you were named interim. Is that correct?
What happened interim? I was in Miami, and what happened is Freddie Gonzalez got fired, and actually they fired like four guys on the staff. So you had the AAA manager, the AA manager, the hitting coordinator, outfield and base running coordinator. We all went up to coach the rest of that season in the big leagues, and which was the coolest thing ever, night in and night. And then going over to LA was just, you know, always, I started my coaching career with them, ended my playing career with them, and to go back in that capacity and role where I can, you know, touch everyone in the organization was a blessing. It didn't work out because the year I leave, when I go to Pittsburgh, the first base coach leaves and goes to Detroit. But I'm in the right place at the right time, and, you know, absolutely just love it.
That's great. I guess I shouldn't rehash this, the thing about the L.A., but the takeaway I got was that as soon as Mattingly was healthy, they just let you go, and it didn't seem right to me. Now, maybe I misread it, and I hope so, but, yeah, let's not even bring it up because you're happy. You're in Pittsburgh. Everything worked out. That's good. That's great.
And speaking of being in Pittsburgh, we're right here in Philly, right here on Liberty Bell Smack on WWDB AM Talk 860. And if you are interested in becoming a sponsor of our show, or if you want to call us, talk to us, you can do that at 888-329-3306. And if you also want to send an opinion, we love opinions, good, bad, or indifferent. We will absolutely review it. You could drop us a quick line at libertybellsmack@gmail.com. And speaking of people looking at this show, not just listening, but looking at us on Facebook Live, we have a fan who's actually has a career in baseball as well, Dr. Drayton Patterson. And he has a question for you, Tarek. He says, can we ask you about the things you watch for when you're coaching players and who have gotten on base? What are the things you watch for?
Man, that's a great question. I watch a lot, and watching it starts way before. I mean, like, I'm doing my homework while, like, say we're playing Philly today, but we're going to play Boston in 3 days. I'm watching Boston while we're in Philly. And I'm looking at so much. I'm looking at pitchers, their times, their deliveries to the plate. I'm watching catchers, seeing if they're active or not, meaning throw behind runners. I'm watching how the middle infield turn double plays, how they take the throwdowns from the catchers, outfielders, how they field the ball. Do they get behind it? Do they get around it? What type of throws do they make, you know, going left to right and coming in? It's just an endless journey of chewing up film. And then so when they get there, I got 5 to 8 seconds to give them information between each pitch. First round might be, you know, about the situation. Hey, good job. You got a base hit. Pick up the third base, coach. You know, the guy behind you handles a bat well. Look up for a hit and run. Pick up the signs. And it changes. It's an ongoing, you know, conversation that I have over there. So that's just a few of the things that I look for and talk about.
Are you bilingual by any chance? Because I know a lot of ball players don't speak English today. And to communicate,
I can't speak Spanish.
Okay, because to communicate, it's almost essential.
A little bit of Spanish. And... yeah, you know, we had a couple of players that, you know, a player from Korea, one from Japan. I only had like 2 or 3 words, and so I wear those 2 or 3 words out. And it has nothing to do with baseball.
It's a universal language. You can't go wrong with fundamentals.
It is. It's like,
as long as you can get that through.
You just like run that way.
You know, Tarek, you know, the comparison has come up quite a few times on the XM show, and I'm going to be totally honest. You know, Mike Trout versus Bryce Harper. And there's something about Bryce Harper that I like. I think when I watch baseball, he plays the game like Pete Rose played it, all out. Not a knock on Mike Trout, and, you know, he's done wonders in Anaheim. But, man, oh, man, the swag with Bryce, and you see him up close because the National League, you know, the American League teams, it's kind of hard on the rotating basis. But take us through, you know, seeing Bryce up close, because man, oh man, I look at this guy and I'm telling you, man, I look at Pete Rose.
Yeah.
You know, I'm about to give him the biggest compliment that I can give a player. When you talk about like trendsetters in our game, he's basically has been like the LeBron James of baseball. Not one kid has come in with that much notoriety coming in. And like at 18, 19 years old, he had his own shoe deal. Like, who does that in baseball? It's in football, and I mean in basketball, but not in baseball. This kid plays hard, and I'm calling him a kid because just respectful. He plays hard. And the one thing you do as a first base coach is you have good conversations with, you know, first baseman. And, you know, I talked to Brad Miller this year. Hey, tell me about Bryce Harper. Great teammate. For what he has to deal with on a daily basis, you never know and how he's great with the young players. And that's the thing that you want to hear. Now, when a guy get on the field, he's got to be however he's got to be in order to perform, and he does that. And that's why he was the MVP. But talking about playing hard, definitely plays hard. Gives you everything that he's got. You know, has command and presence when he's in the box. When he's in there, he goes through his routine. Like, you know, Bryce Harper is up to hit. As an outfield coach, gave me fits. Didn't know how to play him. You know, I have the charts and everything. But it was like, man, if I play guys back, he hits it over my head. So I said, forget it. We had nothing to lose. So I played my right fielder in. And because if either he's going to hit a top spin or he's going to hit the ball out the yard, either way, I can only defend one ball. And right. We were able to get one. Right. But he had a tremendous year, man. Tremendous year. And, you know, just a good ball player and has been. Mike Trout, I only seen him 1 year in 2014. He was in our division, so we saw him quite a bit. But he's been hurt a lot. And, you know, that's tough. You know, we miss out on a lot where Bryce is, you know, posted quite a bit. And, you know, it's just been, you know, when you look him up and goes like, well, you know, we don't know. And all of a sudden now, like, he's in the running and actually wins MVP. So, you know, hats off to him.
You know, when you look at, and I know you're a believer of the you know, stealing bases and, you know, I grew up with the Lou Brocks, the Ricky Hendersons, you know, all those guys. It just seems like the stolen bases this year is, or, you know, for the last few years has been kind of like on a decline here. Where has it gone between the stolen base and almost the bunt? Mirror images that we kind of grew up in baseball are just not there anymore.
Yeah. And unfortunately, those types of players are you know, are dying out in our game as well. When you were coming on and lean, you know, you hit the ball a certain way, you bases and you bunt it. 27, as though that's never happened in a game. Everyone's getting it. But it's just the style of the game has changed. And the players and the style is changing as well. And so you have to adapt to it. It does suck that it's not the same anymore and that guys aren't bunting and stealing as much as, you know, I would like to. Like, I'm always, like, nudging our manager, Derek, like, hey, Shelty, let's go. Can we run? And I just don't, you know, we just don't want to run into outs. So I just guess the biggest thing is we'll raid around. And Sexy will come back. Sorry, that's my dog. It's just a guard dog. Sexy will.
On that point,
he's guarding those Brewers, Cardinals, and anybody else that comes in there from the National League Central.
On that point about the bunt and everything going away, small ball. I think you're seeing a slight. You know how the pendulum shifts. I think you're seeing a slight return to that. Especially in the postseason, and specifically with the Braves. They put a lot of get them on, get them over, get them in type of rallies throughout their march to the title. So I think it'll never return to the way it was where you're carrying two middle infielders that don't hit worth a lick. You're never going to see that again, I don't believe. But with respect to going back to small ball, when it's appropriate, yeah, the three-run homer, there's a time and a place for everything. And you never say never. I get it. But I think when it's frustrating to see when they're down a run, it's late in the game and they got a guy on, they don't get him over. So, but I think you're going to see some of that find its way back into the game because we're realizing that in the absence of fundamentals, the game suffers. I don't care if you got a 14-13 game. First of all, I don't appreciate those type of games myself. But a lot of people do. A lot of the fans are younger and they want to see that. I get it. But you don't sacrifice the you know, the sanctity of the game for a big score. So I think we're going to see it eke its way back in a little at a time.
Kicks dig the long balls, Sal.
Yeah, I know. I know. But you win you win championships with the long ball in addition to all the other things you need to do. So, right. Chicks dig championships too.
Hey, Roland, I mean, if you can change anything in the NBA today, looking at, you know, what's going on in baseball and, you know, the stolen base and the bunt and all that, what would you change in the NBA since, you know, when you covered all these games with the Bulls in the heyday and seeing the Lakers and the Sixers and, you know, what would you do if you were running the league, if you were the Adam Silver?
Well, you know, I think the similarity in baseball and basketball is that scoring electrifies fans. It excites crowds. And the suits kind of try to do everything to facilitate scoring. In the NBA, they cut the timeline from 10 seconds, bringing the ball across the timeline, down to 8. And then on the reset, on the offensive rebound, instead of getting a full 24 seconds to operate, they cut that to 14. And so all those championships that Phil Jackson and his players won in Chicago and then in L.A., you can't even run the triangle offense. It's effectively outlawed. The triangle is a two-guard front. You got to stagger one of those guards. The timeline doesn't. You have to rush to get it across half court. There's no time to reset to run it again on the offensive rebound. Speaking of Dennis Rodman earlier, he was the offensive rebound guy. If it's a 14-second clock, those offensive rebounds aren't as precious as they were when he got them. So what they've done is dramatically alter the game. Same thing's happened in baseball. And the hard thing about it is that they're making a lot more money. And this goes back, this is a Philadelphia story. Eddie Gottlieb, who was the owner coach of the Philadelphia Warriors, he came in, he had this Kentucky hillbilly named Jumpin' Joe Fultz. He played him all the time. First guy to average 20 points a game in the NBA. But then lo and behold, Eddie Gottlieb gets Wilt. What's he do? He plays him every minute of the season except for 4. And statistics drive fan interest. And Eddie Gottlieb, not only was he coaching, he would sit there every night and count the house. So a lot of the roots of this lie in Philly. And, of course, analytics has gone everywhere. I would love to see them instead. You can bring the ball up at whatever speed you want, but I don't think they should have been messing with the timeline, and I don't think they should have messed with the reset clock. But that's just me. I'm a guy who likes the game out of the 80s and 90s. And I think baseball, a lot of the same. You know, a lot of us in the baby boom generation have this appreciation.
Yeah, I think the three ball, like the three run homer, is the culprit. I mean, it's obvious, but it's like schoolyard.
Yeah, well,
it's like schoolyard.
Curry, if you got him shooting him, I'd watch that all day.
Right,
but you've got a league of people. It's butt ugly. These guys take these shots.
You know what's odd, Roland? He owns the record now, and his coach owns the record for three ball percentage, highest percentage ever. Isn't that ironic?
Right. Yeah. And you know, and I said, put a time machine in there and you could let the Bulls of the late 90s play the Warriors.
Yes.
But what would Steve Kerr do? He coached one team and play on one.
You know, Roland, who's your Mount Rushmore? Your five. Give me your Mount Rushmore.
Oh, man.
Man, you've been around, man. And I'll tell you, I'm going to take this to the bank because whatever you say, I'm going to run with it because you've been around the game. You studied the game. You've seen these guys. Who's your top five? Center, two forwards, and the guards.
I hate to say this. I'm a writer. And I know a lot of basketball. I've coached a lot, played played a year of college football, 3 years of rugby. You know, I've been around games a long time, coached forever. I really hesitate to get into that because I kind of view these guys that get out of here and play 10, 12, 15 years. They make their statement on the floor. And what kind of jerk am I to come in and say, oh, he's number three and he's number one. I have a lot of respect. I don't care if I'm naming the top 50. I have a lot of respect for people that compete and in every sport. And I think that's way beyond my pay grade. And that's terrible. I'm a writer. I make my living.
Roland, it's only conjecture. It's only conjecture. Yeah. And that's what makes, right. That's what makes
conversation. Go ahead and tell you, obviously, number one's Jordan. And this is emotional for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I knew Kobe from the time he was a kid. But these are my personal favorites. That's the way I'll do it.
Yeah.
I always really enjoyed watching Larry and Magic. It's hard not to love Dr. J, but there's so many guys that have really, you know, I really admired the way Scottie Pippen grew into playing the game.
Isaiah
Thomas is the toughest competitor I've seen pound for pound. And Joe Dumars, you know, I'm not even sure Isaiah was a superstar on that team. And that was the opinion Jerry West gave me, that Joe Dumars was probably the real superstar on the Pistons. So, and I'd throw Jerry West in there somewhere. And I haven't even mentioned Bill Russell or Wilt or, I mean, how do you do this without just insulting greatness?
Well, it's only conjecture, Roland. And that, you know, for all sports, that's what makes conversation great. It's only your opinion. Nothing's etched in stone. But let me ask you a question. I'm going to give you a chance to beat a bad guy right now because Mike is on your Mount Rushmore. But the fact that he could not hit a baseball gives me so much pleasure because I can hit a curveball. He, the best athlete in the world, according to many, couldn't hit a curveball. What are your thoughts on that? And did he ever talk to you about it?
Well, first of all, Mike was at 12 years old. His father loved baseball, and his father didn't like Mike. And that is the fundamental thing that drove him.
Right.
And as a little leaguer, Michael was the little league player of the year.
Right.
For North Carolina at age 12.
Yeah.
He hit, they came within a whisker of the Little League World Series. He threw two no-hitters that season. He hit a 270-foot home run in the elimination game. They lost going into the Little League World Series. Mike blew it up big time. The next year, and this is how cruel the game is, the next year he moved up to Dixie League. Base paths were longer. He couldn't get off the bench. And he never, after being the Little League Player of the Year, people talk about him not making the varsity basketball team as a sophomore. That doesn't hurt as much as the fact that he went on and played high school baseball. He dropped off the team his senior year to play McDonald's All-America basketball. But he never even made more than an honorable mention in high school baseball. And he and his father had this thing that father sons have sometimes with a little bit of disapproval creeps in there. And, you know, when James Jordan got murdered, he had always hoped that Michael would go play baseball. And hell, I couldn't hit a curveball either. So I would just say that I was really proud of Michael for going and honoring his dad for, and obviously, there are all kinds of elements to it, but he humbled himself to go ride those minor league baseball buses. He could have been Broadway wherever he went. And he really, you know, he would sit down there. He had in Birmingham when he played for the Barons. He had a deck on the house he rented. He would sit out there at night on the deck and look up the stars. He'd lost his father. He was really mourning the whole time he was in baseball. And you know, he showed up at spring training. Terry might know this. You know, everybody comes in whatever attire. And he shows up there in his full game uniform. And it was almost like a guy showing up for Little League. You know, he was going back to try to pick up that life and the fact that he couldn't, you know, and it was tough. Baseball was pretty much an all-white game in North Carolina. He was the sole African-American on the team. It was a cultural isolation thing. But he wouldn't make any of those excuses. He just couldn't hit the freaking ball.
I feel bad now. I said the statement tongue-in-cheek, but you made me feel bad now. But I understand, you know, because he is, according to most, the best basketball player ever, and it was just odd that, you know, he couldn't master the other game, and my favorite game, too. But we need a station break right now, so we're going to wrap things up.
I can't believe it has been almost an entire hour on Liberty Bell Smack. I feel like we could sit here and have coffee for hours and hear all the stories with Roland and Tarik, and we would love for you guys to come back on the show. And Tarik, if anybody wanted to contact you, how can they do that or touch base with you somewhere? Get that pun?
Man, I'm like, you know, everybody else. I do social media. I haven't been on in a while. So I should have said, you know, TarikBrockSR on Instagram, Tarik Brock on Facebook, Twitter, I think it's the same as well. I couldn't tell you what's going on in either one of those worlds. I've actually shut down once the season was over to just refresh, but that's where I'm at. Eventually, I'll get around to posting some things, but that's where you can find me at.
Well, you're not going anywhere. We're going to sing a happy birthday to you because next week's your birthday, brother.
Oh, then let's do that now. Are you ready, guys?
You're not getting out of this.
Come on, let's do it. Are you ready?
All right.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
We sound like we've been sitting in a bar for 4 hours.
It absolutely did.
And one thing about this, it's live too, so you can't take this back.
It's on film.
It's recorded too.
It is.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Roland, where can we find you, Roland?
Well, you know, you pop Google in Roland, R-O-L-A-N-D, Lazenby, and my Twitter will pop up. It's at Lazenby, L-A-Z-E-N-B-Y. Probably Facebook will pop up in there too. You know, same perfect answer, all the social media platforms.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, guys, we love to sign off the show with a chant. Can you guys hang out for 2 minutes and we could do it together?
I hope it's better than happy birthday.
Yeah, way better.
Much better.
Way
I better. Promise you. And I can't believe, like I said, it's the end of Liberty Bell Smack. But next week, when you tune in on Thursday night, it is going to be the one, the only, and our very first Christmas spectacular with lots of fun, lots of surprises. And our special guests next week are the lead NCAA men's basketball referee and success life coach, Dr. Dave White, and Major League Baseball reporter, J.P. Hornstra. So, guys, we have a big show next week. Got to come all dressed for Christmas.
Keeps getting better and better. We're just so blessed. And look at Roland and Tarik in here, man. I'm excited, man.
Well, again, I'm going to point it out. If you're watching Facebook Live, he was so sweet, Tarik, to come on. And right there, I see him in his little right corner. He has my initials on his fireplace. I'm going to say it again because I love it. Absolutely. See, he did it just for this show. But guys, we love to sign off with our Liberty Bell Smack chant. And the way we do that is we count down from 5 to 1, and then we all say Liberty Bell Smack. You think you could do that in unison, guys?
Yeah, we can do that. We definitely can do that.
Well, from all of us here at Liberty Bell Smack, I am Marianne Costello, along with our host, Mr. Mark Mancini and Mr. Sal Tartaglia, and signing off with our wonderful guests, Roland Lazenby and Tarik Brock. We are going to count it down, boys. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Liberty Bell Smack! Yeah.